I want you to open your Bible to Joshua 14, verse number 6. We had just started this part of the story when we ran out of time last time. Joshua is at Gilgal, the first place that Israel settled in when they entered the Promised Land. It's kind of been the headquarters for military operations for the last, I think, 7 years. I think we're in the seventh year of being in the Promised Land when this story starts. And they have secured the first pass-through in the majority of the Promised Land. They've had the taking over the central area in that first year, the southern area in the second year, the northern area in the third year, and then they did some cleanup in years 4, 5, and 6, I think. And they are ready now for the seventh year of military activities before they begin their first year of rest in the Promised Land, which will start in the fall of this particular year, which is 1410 BC, according to my calculations. All of the area east of the Jordan has already been divvied up between 2.5 tribes. Reuben, Gad, and a substantial portion, half, of the tribe of Manasseh. Moses took care of that. Those groups were required by Moses to be in the vanguard, the point of the spear, for all military operations on the western side once they entered into the Promised Land. And so they presumably have been engaged in that. Well, now that all that's been kind of taken care of, it's time to start divvying up the inheritance among the other 9.5 tribes. And the first 3 tribes that get specific territories are Judah and Ephraim and the other half of Manasseh. And I think the reason those 3 groups are highlighted here at the very beginning is because the Judah tribe is the tribe of the firstborn, the legal firstborn of Jacob. And the other 2 are the sons of Joseph tribes, which were very special to Jacob, which is why he adopted his grandson so that Joseph would end up with a double portion, the heir's portion, in all the things that would happen in the future. So that's why I believe they're the first ones to receive their inheritance. Now, Judah is the first tribe that comes forward. And there's a little something in the book of Judges at this time that I think we need to bring forward. Judges is the next place we're going to go anyway. And it says this. It says, after the death of Joshua. Now, that I think is more helpful for events coming later in chapter 1. I think what happens next is a bit of a flashback that happens previous to the death of Joshua. And the reason I believe that is because some of the things mentioned parallel what we're about to read in the book of Joshua. So we have the next thing. It says, the people of Israel, and I think it's a past tense that we should focus on here, had inquired of he who is, who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them. And so the question was, what territory should be secured first as an inheritance? I think that's what's being asked. And he who is said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand. So I think it's the Judah tribe that is going to be given the first allotment in the promised land. And so they come forward at Gilgal to talk to Joshua about that very thing. What territory are we going to inherit so we can go in and start really confirming it as our property and dealing with any mop-up of Canaanites that are trying to come back into the places we chased them out of already. So that's back to Joshua chapter 14 now. Ready? Then the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal. Now the oldest guy in the Judah tribe, old by more than 20 years, is Caleb. So he's kind of their tribal leader. So Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, meaning Joshua, "You know what he who has said to Moses, the man of God, in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me." So he and Joshua share memories that go back a lot longer than anybody else. They were two of the 12 spies sent out by Moses into the promised land from the southern entry point in the second year of the Exodus to determine how best to go in and take the land. And so Caleb is doing a little bit of flashback with him, saying, "You remember what transpired. You remember the conversations that happened back at that time." And then he gives us things that help us to anchor the chronology here. "I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of he who has sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land." That was in the second year of the Exodus, that he was 40. "I brought him word again as what was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. Yet I wholly followed he who is my God." And that's exactly what happened. 10 of the spies panicked and gave a bad report, which caused the people to despair of taking over the promised land. And that's how we ended up with kind of a rebellion. And we end up also with the penalty phase of the wandering in the wilderness until that whole generation was dead, except for Joshua and Caleb. Now, I will make one other exception. I think Eleazar, the high priest, also is a holdover from that generation, because the Levites that he was part of were not part of the militia. So they weren't part of the rebellion at that time. So I don't think their whole group was penalized like the 12 tribes had been penalized. But that's just my opinion. Anyway, back to the text, verse 9. "Moses swore on that day, saying, 'Surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be an inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed he who is my God.'" So Caleb had a conversation with Moses about the territory that he'd passed through, and apparently he had made a special request to occupy the land around Hebron. Now, Hebron was a very special city anyway, because it's the city of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. The Cave of Machpelah is located there. Abraham and Sarah are buried there. Isaac and Rebekah are buried there. Jacob and Leah are buried there, and others, no doubt. And so Caleb makes the request to Moses first, apparently, "I want that land for myself. Promise that to me." And apparently Moses did. Verse 10, Caleb continues his story. "Now behold, he who is has kept me alive, just as he said, these 45 years since that time that he who has spoke this word to Moses while Israel walked in the wilderness. Now behold, I am this day 85 years old. Now that doesn't mean it's his birthday. He's just simply saying, I'm 85 now. I was 40 in the second year of the Exodus. I'm 85 now. That tells us we're in the seventh year we're in the seventh year that they have been in the promised land. Then, verse 11, I am still as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. My strength now is my strength was then for war and for coming and going. So he says, I feel just as fit today at 85 as I did at 40. He was a man of war back at that time, and he says, I'm still a man of war. And I believe him. I believe that God has blessed him with supernatural vitality and that he is going to live a good long life. I've told you, I believe that the tradition that the Jewish people have regarding Joshua's age is probably correct. He dies at 110 after leading the Israelis for 25 years. So I'm thinking he's probably right around 88 at this time. And he's still a good man of war. But listen to Caleb's request. Verse 12, so now, give me this hill country of which he who is spoke on that day, for you heard on that day how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. It may be that he who is will be with me, and I shall drive them out just as he who is said. Now, one of the things that the bad spies kept harping on is that the Anakim are in the land. The giant descendants are in the land. They are part of the Nephilim. They make us feel like grasshoppers, which is kind of a double entendre. We're little, and also grasshoppers were a form of food. And it could be that the Anakim were cannibals. The stories of giants throughout the world often contain this idea that these large hybrids of the demonic world and human world were cannibalistic. They ate people. Even the little things that I grew up with as a kid coming out of Europe, you know, fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman. Be he live or be he dead, I'll use his bones to make my bread. Right? Cannibalistic. So that is the type of people that were living right around Hebron. And Caleb says, give me Hebron. I'll go in there. I'll clear those giants out, and I will take that property as my own. And Joshua's on board with that. Joshua blessed him. He gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. And therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day, because he wholly followed he who is the God of Israel. And then a little reminder here, the name of Hebron formerly was Kiriath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. And we've actually seen Arba mentioned in other passages. He has three sons. Kiriath Arba was also named Mamre in the time of Abraham. So it's got a lot of different names down here. Then we have something here that tells us what will happen later in this year, and the land had rest from war. So once the people of Judah and Caleb at the head of them take over the land of Hebron and the land of the Canaanites fully, they will then have their year of rest, because it will be the sabbatical year coming up in the fall of 1410 BC. Now, before we go to chapter 15 of Joshua, I want to read a little bit more of the story from the book of Judges about the Judeans going in and taking this land and Caleb getting his property, because that's in the book of Judges. So go back to Judges chapter 1. Let me remind you again that the people of Israel inquired of He Who Is, who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them? That is, to take the inheritance fully in hand and occupy the land. That's the question. He Who Is said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I've given the land into his hand. So Judah said to Simeon, his brother. Now, it's brother tribes. Judah and Simeon were full brothers back in the time of Jacob. But here they are partner tribes in the time of Joshua. Come up with me into the territory allotted to me, that we may fight against the Canaanites. And this helps explain why the Simeonites will be given little pockets of land inside the tribal region of Judah, because they fought for it. They cleared out some of the pockets of resistance that have built back up since the first sweep through in the second year in the Promised Land, when the Israelis fought back against the Southern Canaan Alliance. Continuing in that verse, likewise, I will go with you into the territory allotted to you. So Simeon went with him, and Judah went up, and He Who Is gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they defeated 10,000 of them at Bezek. Now, we don't know exactly where the city of Bezek is, but it's somewhere in the Judah / Simeon territory. Verse 5, they found Adoni Bezek. Adoni means Lord, and so it's basically a synonym for king. So we're talking about the king of Bezek. So they found Adoni Bezek at Bezek, fought against him, defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Adoni Bezek fled from them, but they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his big toes. So this was before they ended up executing him. Why? Adoni Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and their big toes cut off used to pick up scraps under my table. As I have done, so God has repaid me. So basically, the Judeans and the Simeonites, they know that this Adoni Bezek has been a horrible person. He's collected leaders from other places to live in his, we'll call it a palace, whatever his headquarters is. But he's chopped off their thumbs and their big toes as a way to shame them. You take off your big toes and you have a hard time walking. You take off your thumbs, you have a hard time picking things up. And so he did this to these guys to shame them, and then let them only eat what fell off his table. He thought that was funny. And guess what? The Israelis applied the Old Testament law of let the punishment fit the crime. So they took off his thumbs and his big toes, and then let him be like that for a little while before they finally executed him. And he understood that that seemed to be ironic justice. So then they brought him to Jerusalem, or Yebus, and he died there. Now, why do they go there? Because even though they had killed the king of Jebus, or Jerusalem, during that second year of operations, the Southern Canaanite Alliance operation, they had apparently not dealt with the city that he came from. But now they're going to. So verse 8, the men of Judah fought against Jerusalem. They captured it, struck it with the edge of the sword, and set the city on fire. So they didn't have an intention of occupying it, it doesn't sound like. They just wanted to destroy it. Spoiler alert, the people that escaped from the Israelis at this time and who had escaped from Jebus during the Southern Canaanite alliance fight, they eventually come back to the ruins of Jebus and they rebuilt it. And apparently the Judeans and the Benjamites, who kind of share a border right next to Jerusalem, allowed them to do it. That's going to become part of our story in the book of Judges, is that the Israelis don't follow through with God's instructions not to allow the Canaanites to remain in the land. And so they will become a long-term thorn in the side of the Israelis right there in the heart of their territory. Verse number 9. Afterward, the men of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who lived in the hill country in the Negev and in the lowland. And then Judah went against the Canaanites who lived in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba. And they defeated Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai. And of course we know that it was Caleb who led in that operation because that's his territory. So this is one of the reasons we understand that this section in Judges chapter 1 is a flashback to the operations that happened under Joshua before it starts taking up the story of what happened after Joshua died. A little bit more of the story that's related to Caleb and his family. Verse 11, from there they, and we're talking about the Judeans and the Simeonites, they went up against the inhabitants of Debir. The name of Debir was formerly Kiriath Sefer. Now, we're not 100% certain where it was located, but it must be not far from Hebron. The guess, the suggestion, is that it's probably a site a few miles, about 8 or so miles south and west from Hebron. But anyway, it says in verse 12, Caleb said, he who attacks Kiriath Sefer and captures it, I will give him Aksah, my daughter, for a wife. So he says, you want to get married into my family? Take this city. And so Othniel, who becomes important in the story of the Judges, Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, captured it. So this is his nephew, Caleb's nephew. And so he gave Aksah, his daughter, for a wife. And when she came to him, she urged him to ask her father for a field. Now again, this is weird to our modern day way of doing things. Marriages back at that time were pretty much arranged by families. So this woman, once she realizes she's going to get married in this way, she says to her future husband, you need to go back and ask my dad for something more, because just having this city is not good enough. And apparently, Othniel says, I tell you what, why don't you request it of him? Because he won't deny you. So verse 14, when she came to him, she urged him to ask her father for a field. She dismounted from her donkey, and Caleb said to her, what do you want? She said to him, give me a blessing. Since you have set me in the land of the Negev, so that's the south desert region of Judea, give me also springs of water. So dad, You gave us this city that's surrounded by a lot of dry land. We need you to deed over to us, or to include in the deed for this city some springs that are nearby. And so Caleb agrees. Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. Since we are starting to run out of time here, let me point you to, we'll go ahead and just finish where we're at, how about, and then we'll run out of time. The descendants of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up with the people of Judah from the city of Palms, that's Jericho, into the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the Negev near Arad. They went and settled with the people. So some of the relatives of Moses that have kind of been adopted into Israel, they followed the Judah-Simeon incursion to take over their inheritance right into the Negev. And they decided they would set up their tents there. And then Judah went with Simeon, his brother. They defeated the Canaanites who inhabited Zephath, devoted it to destruction. And the name of the city was then called Hormah. So this is how they kept taking all of these southern cities. Judah also captured Gaza with its territory, Ashkelon with its territory, Ekron with its territory. Remember, those were some of the cities of the Philistines that were left untouched in the original push. So the Judeans are doing a lot of cleanup. And he who is was with Judah, he took possession of the hill country, but he could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain because they had chariots of iron. That's getting ahead of our story a little bit, that the coastal region has a lot of high-tech equipment that's going to need a lot of faith to deal with that.